dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers.
I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, sitting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISO, RAM, SIP. Dedicated to the hackers.
Hello and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 181, and today's date is January 9th, 2007. I'm Black Ratchet.
And I'm Not Theory.
And I'm going to cruise in this evening. When's the last time you've been on?
I think I was last on episode 2. It was a long time. It's been a long time.
I think you did one with Stank Dog, and then right before I took over, and that was the last time you were on. But I don't remember how many shows I've been doing. So
yeah, that sounds about right. I've been wrapped up in real life for a while. So
damn real life.
I know, it's the worst.
Yeah. All right. I don't have any housekeeping. Do you have any housekeeping?
I wish I did, but I don't. So.
Well, the only housekeeping I have is, like, you know, I need to clean up my room because it's still a bit of shambles from Christmas. I have, like, all my stuff sitting around. It's driving me nuts.
You get any cool stuff for Christmas? Any cool geek stuff?
I got a wireless weather station. That's my cool geek thing.
Cool. Wireless, it's like a standard, or wireless like Wi-Fi?
Wireless, like, it has a sensor on the outside that picks up all the weather, and that's how it relays it back to my comfort of my own home.
Oh, okay. I thought it was one of those, like, ones that hooks up to the computer, and then does all kinds of craziness.
That would be cool, and the thought has crossed my mind. However, it's like 915 megahertz, and I'm like, yeah, I'm never going to reverse engineer those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, radio's not just
I do not have the elite skills.
Word.
All right. Have you been getting anything good for Christmas?
Well, Verizon gave me a PTC 6700, or sorry, an XV 6700 to replace the Frito thing.
Yeah, can't have that PPC. You know, PPC has tethering in it. Can't have that.
Tethering? Wait a second. Maybe I'm a noob. What exactly? Are you talking about, like, using it as a modem? Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, you can do that on this phone, too. You just have to, you know, break the terms of service and all kinds of stuff. Yes, Verizon really sucks. I understand that. But I actually get service in places, which is nice. And when I had Sprint, I didn't. So even though Sprint has the same phone and wireless plan is $15 a month and you can use it as a modem, if I can't use it anywhere, I'm spending $15 a month for nothing.
That's very true.
But yeah, I like it. It's good so far. It's better than the Trio. It's faster. The keyboard's not as nice, but the screen is a little bit bigger. It seems like the Bluetooth works a little bit better. The camera is definitely better. And it has Wi-Fi. So, yeah.
Oh. The Trio doesn't have Wi-Fi?
You can get a Wi-Fi card for it.
I wasn't aware of that.
It has to take up the SD slot, which then means that you can't use a memory card because they've discontinued the combination memory card Wi-Fi. So no matter what you do with the Trio, you're screwed. I'm just not a fan.
Which is why you dropped it.
I have so many problems with it, and finally, if you bitch at them enough and you tell them that you've had a lot of problems and you've been a customer for a long time and just go on and on and on, eventually they'll say, okay, we can swap it, which they should do because for whatever reason, the 6700 is $100 cheaper than the Trio, even though it's faster and looks better and works better and has Wi-Fi. It's still cheaper. I don't get it. But what the hell do I know? So in any case, that was.
Well, it doesn't have it's not a trio, and B, it doesn't have the ultra cool, you know, one-handed dialing thing, which all the trios users like to tout, saying, "Oh, I can dial mine with one hand." Okay,
yeah,
and yeah, I can do it too on mine when I have the MDA, which is more or less, I think, the same form factor. I mean, size-wise, I mean, not the form factor, but I mean, I can take it out and I dial with one hand with my thumb. You just have to make sure you tap the buttons, and you got to be careful, and you got to hit it with your phone or your finger.
Honestly,
fingernail.
Dialing straight up numbers on my trio, people said it was so easy. It's just the same as dialing on the screen for me. It's just a pain in the ass. I don't like it. And I have everybody in my phone book anyway, so it doesn't really matter. So blat to them.
I just like voice assisted dialing. That's good.
I bought myself a
Bob
headset, and I thought that voice assisted dialing was the stupidest thing ever, but I programmed it once or twice, and you know, it's kind of convenient. I'm sitting in the car, and I can tap the button and leave my phone on the floor or on the windowsill or, you know, wherever the hell I want, and, you know, I don't have to do anything. It just calls the number for me. Lets me be fat and lazy. I love it.
I had a Bluetooth headset, which technically I still have one, and the audio is so low on it, I can't use it with my cell phone. It drives me. I was like really pissed off because I said, "Oh, it has Bluetooth, and I already have a headset that I got from my PDA because I don't know, I just had money to burn." And I was like, "Oh, I'll set it up and I'll use it." And I was like, "Oh man, I can." I mean, I left myself a voicemail message, and I'm like, "I can't hear myself on this damn thing."
Yeah, I had a lot of bad luck with headsets. I had a really good one, maybe a year or two ago. It was Bluetooth, and it had caller ID on the headset, so if you had it laying on the desk, you could just pick it up and see who it was, even if your phone was in your bag. And I used it all the time, and I loved it. And I went out to a bar one night, and somebody bumped into me and smashed the whole thing. It was in my front pocket and just crushed it. It was still usable, but it had no more display.
Ouch.
It didn't charge right anymore, and it started doing weird stuff. So I chucked it and didn't care about it. But then when I got this new phone, I was like, all right, I'm going to get a Bluetooth headset. And let me tell you, I got a Plantronics headset because it said something about 15 hours talk time, and you could use like a AAA battery or whatever, and I had rechargeable AAA, so I was like, all right, this is great. I can just pop a AAA in it and just keep a couple around, and I don't have to worry about charging it if I'm on the road, because I was on the road all the time, maybe 2 months ago. So I get the thing, and I open it up. Yeah, you can use a AAA battery to recharge it with this other weird thing that attaches to it, but you still can't use it. You know, when the battery's dead, you can't replace it with the AAA battery. So I was like, all right, this is stupid, and it sounds like shit. Let me return it. So then I got a Motorola one that was half the price. And everybody said that it sounded like shit. So I was like, all right. So I took that one back. And then I got a Jabra one, which is the people who made my original caller ID headset. I got that one, which was half the price of the Motorola one, which is now a quarter the price of the Plantronics one. And it seems to work fine. Nobody's complained about it yet. I'm talking on it now. Maybe if it sucks, then I'll go back to the store and return it again. But so far, it's been good enough where people haven't been complaining, and the battery life has been long enough where I don't have to worry about getting cut off. So hopefully those things will hold up tonight. It just got.
Well, I gotta say, it sounds pretty good to me. So. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, who knows what's going on? It could be Bluetooth. It could be the VoIP connection. It could be GSM to CDMA to EULAW, and it could be the
Well, I think we're
could be that lame ass Bell's Mind server. Who knows?
Going to, from Bluetooth to CDMA to Bell's Mind to I don't know what the hell you're on. You're on some kind of VoIP probably.
Yeah, you're going Bell's Mind to new phone to my computer at home to my Cisco phone.
Yeah.
I think that path is all
EULAW.
We still
have a big round trip because the phone company that I'm using is like, you know, 1,500 miles, maybe 1,000 miles away from where my server is. So you've got round trip time to and from there twice. So in any case, it's a long route that this call is taking, so it's surprising that it's actually working at all.
Hey, you never know. We could, like, bounce it off a few satellites or something. We could have, like, that scene in Sneakers where they're, like, routing it through, like, 15 billion points, and we can have the really cool graphic
Of,
like, the voice going back and forth.
Using, Winamp, and it's got all those, like, NullSub video channels, and I saw Sneakers on, so I flipped it on. And it was that scene where he's like, Bishop, they've almost got us. You know, they've almost got it. Hang up. I'm like, dude, this is the dumbest thing ever. Like, the blind guy is staring at the screen, seeing where the call trace is going through. It's just ridiculous.
Well, you can listen to the sounds. I got to say, that movie rocked. It still does. I mean, you look at it today, and it's pure cheese.
Yeah,
but at the same point, you look at it and go,
like,
man,
that
was a cool movie.
Really, really, really pissed me off. It was just dumb. However, I got to say that... Man, what was that guy's name? Whistler? Blind guy? Yeah. His Braille terminal was the most badass thing I've ever seen.
Whistler?
I don't know
yeah.
if you remember that part.
I actually know someone who has used one of those before, so. And
Okay.
No, so he's blind. He has to use one. Of course, that now uses text-to-speech, but he used to use one.
Maybe he was.
He actually used to work for the telephone company, so. Ooh.
Anyway, so.
Yeah. Well, wasn't Joe Ingrassia the inspiration for Whistler? Yeah, I think that was one of the blind phone freaks. Of course, this man is also a blind phone freak,
yeah.
But I don't think he was the inspiration. So who knows?
I don't know how we got on the topic of... Well, I guess I do know how we got on the topic of sneakers. But, in any case, headset is cool. Like I said, I returned it a bunch of times, and now I'm having problems. I'm trying to get a video camera. Not a video camera, but like a webcam working with a microphone, USB, on Windows. It's just not working for me. I've been through probably five of them now, and every single one of them has a problem. Either... the video's crappy, or the audio's crappy. And the audio's crappy in almost the exact same way every time, even if it's a different manufacturer. So, I don't know what's going on. And on two different computers, by two different manufacturers. However, on my girlfriend's computer, they all work just fine.
My father-in-law has been having an issue with his webcam, and I think it's an issue with his computer, and I don't know if it's a physical hardware issue or something is just really fouled up in Windows, but when he starts chatting online with his video webcam conferencing software, which is, I think he's whatever they call Microsoft Messenger these days, Windows Live, MSN, Messenger, Mobile, they keep on tacking new names onto it, I don't know what it is anymore, but... his processor overheats and it eventually shuts down. And I'm curious if just something's,
what
you know,
kind of
taxing the processor. There's something like seriously wrong with his fan.
Okay. You know, I've noticed the
creative something.
The video is really crappy, but the video seems to always work at least. And it didn't have a microphone on it, so that wasn't a problem. But the Logitech ones, I could see the processor overheating because just capturing the video on my laptop takes like 60% of the CPU. And it's not like my laptop is all that great. It's like a 1.8 gigahertz.
Holy crap.
But still. No, I'm just saying it's not like some
oh,
like,
geez, you know, it's trash. Throw it out.
Some kind of crap.
Go take it down to Las Vegas and go film yourself destroying it.
Might bring me to that point. But, no, I don't think I'm going to do that again.
Actually, here's the question. You know, since you're frustrated at the Trio, is it intact? Is it has it been broken off into 10 different pieces?
I don't know how to answer that. I okay. I had some. No.
Or how's the anger management classes actually worked?
The first couple of Trios I had. One just stopped working entirely. It kept telling me it was flight mode. It turns out that it had lost the programming that tells it my cell phone number, so it kept connecting to the network, disconnecting, and whatever. Verizon replaced it. The next one had Bluetooth problems. But in between, there was one that met with an untimely demise. So I was trying. I had lost a whole bunch of money. Some hardware that I bought for my business had gone sour, and the warranty had just run out like the month before. And everything that I had at the time was on it because of a million other factors. I have backups and all that, but it's just frustrating because I have to go down to this colo and spend all kinds of time there and fix things and rent new machines. It was a mess, so I was pissed off. And I figured I just got off the phone with somebody.
And you saw the trio standing there, and it was like looking at you,
well, you know what?
The bad way,
like,
and you're like, you little shit,
off.
You're going to get destroyed.
With somebody. I was furious. They had, you know, it was completely unrelated, but they had just totally ruined my day with something else. And I took my phone, and I went to throw it into this couch that I have. And at the last second, I don't know what came over me. I was like, no, fuck this. It's going straight to the wall. And it just exploded everywhere. So I lost the 1 gig memory card. I can't find it at all. But I did have insurance on the thing, and I was, you know, milliseconds away from returning it anyway. So I was like, all right, I'll learn my lesson. I'll pay the $50, and I'll get a new one, and then I'll have them replace that with. Oh, I dropped it.
So how did you explain this to the insurance company?
The wall very quickly without the assistance of gravity.
Oh.
I mean, they don't need to know that gravity is not a
part. Not theory. Smash.
I dropped it. I let go of it. No, I still stand by it.
I guess not, but most people drop it from like five feet. You probably look like you dropped it off a 12-story building.
Faster than terminal velocity for a trio. I don't know what that is, but I'd really like to find out what it is. I'm sure that this device was going faster than that. So the only way I could say that I dropped this was if I put some type of aerodynamic, you know, casing around it and dropped it while I was skydiving. Not an air. Which could be possible, but like I said, it was in my hand. I let go of it.
Which could be possible.
So, it's just not my fault.
Yeah, I was actually thinking, you know, oh, it's a trio. It's expensive. He's not going to hurl this at anything. Oh no, no. He just got really angry one day and decided to throw it into a wall.
No,
you know, $400 piece of equipment.
Ah, you know, I'm actually fairly good.
Remind me never to let you use my laptop, okay?
If it's mine, I can deal with it if I smash it. No big deal. But like I said, I had just lost like thousands of dollars, and I was just there was nothing I could do about it. I was also 150 miles away from the colo, and I was just totally miserable. Everything was going wrong that day, so I had to get a leave. Yeah, exactly. Like I said, had I just thought it,
and the trio
second,
just got
you know
the
what?
Front of it.
Now it's no big deal. It'll be fine. But I decided it's going to meet the wall or the floor. I was actually I threw it so hard I don't even know where it hit. It had these weird like red marks on it, and I looked around. I'm like, well, the wall's not red, and the floor's not red. So what the hell is this? So yeah, the trio will bleed.
You made it bleed. You can't get blood from a Strone, but you can get blood from a trio, just so you all know.
So anyway, so yes, I have to admit I did smash my device. I was so good, I didn't smash that thing for a year. Come on, you got to give that to me.
I'm still ticked off about, you know, for those of you who don't know, not Theory owned a Sidekick, which we actually will cover in this show because the topic is smartphones and stuff like that. So we'll let Not Theory go flip out on the Sidekick for us. And I had a Sidekick 1, and he bought a Sidekick 2. And I was like, oh, okay, well, Sidekick 2, that's pretty cool. You know, and when I initially asked him about it, he said, oh, it was pretty good. And then he ran into some issues with it, and I ran into a lot of issues. And not very much with the phone, more like the phone's,
absolutely.
The political
yeah,
side
danger,
of it, using the phone. Am I correct in this?
They suck.
Yeah. Yeah, so not even the phone had an issue on it. It was just not theory being frustrated with the company who was in charge of software development. So I'm talking to him one day, and he said, "Oh yeah, well, you know, I got rid of the sidekick." "Oh, what happened?" And he explains it to me. He said, "Yeah, so I got really frustrated one day, and I just decided to throw it in the wall, and the screen smashed." And I was like, "You're not you just wanted to get rid of it, so you threw it against a wall?"
"Yeah, but you know
yeah.
what? It was a piece of crap.
I could have really used that." "Oh, sorry, man." I didn't mind the sidekick too. I mean, initially I decided to grow up and, you know, actually get something that was not designed for the Paris Hilton crowd. But that could have got me a sidekick too about a year early, and I probably could have lost it, like I lost mine 3 months later.
But nothing I can do about it now, man. Hey, I told you then. You knew then that I hated that phone, and I made no bones about what I hated and why. So can't say I didn't warn you.
And if those of you who and for those of you who haven't seen the opening to what is it, Hack TV 2? Yeah, Hack TV 2. If you look at the opening sequence, you'll see Natus using a phone and typing on it, and then you suddenly see Knot Theory just come up to him and throw it out of his hand. And that is the sidekick too,
with
smashed screen, and
it was
thoroughly destroyed after that.
I don't know. I got my use out of it. It was good for a while, but my big problem was danger. And maybe we can talk about that later. But I don't know. I'm pretty happy. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with the 6700 now. And
yeah, I think we shouldn't do that.
Let me think. What else? Oh, the last thing that I got for Christmas that I will not be smashing is a Wi-Fi camera, which is pretty cool. Yeah, the Nikon Coolpix P3. It's an 8.1 megapixel Wi-Fi camera. So there's basically just this little piece of software you install on Windows, and you set up an ad hoc network, and as you're taking pictures, you can transfer them right to your PC. Now, there's a bunch of DSLR cameras that already have this type of feature, but this is the first consumer model that has it. And I'm in the process right now of trying to reverse engineer their protocol so that I can write my own application that'll pull the pictures off of the camera. Because their software is okay, but it doesn't do exactly what I want. So that's what I've been fiddling with recently. And I gotta tell you, reverse engineering is a lot of fun, but it's
not
really
theory's hardcore.
With this particular piece of hardware, because it sends back so much data. You know, it sends back like a 2 megabyte picture with all kinds of crazy header information. It's going to take me a while to figure this out, but hopefully I will.
No, I assume you fired up Ethereal
WireShark,
whatever they call it this week.
Yeah, definitely.
And
I fired up WireShark.
Got it, right?
Sniffed
the stream.
A bunch of negotiation back and forth from the camera, when it starts up, when it goes into the certain mode, when it's taking a picture, all of that stuff. So I've got all the data there. It's just, you know, kind of plotting through a bunch of different scenarios and seeing which bytes change and which bytes don't change and trying to figure out what's going on. Some people have tried to document the protocol, but I don't think it's the exact protocol that they advertise it as. I think it's kind of their own magical thing. But it doesn't look complicated. Yeah, exactly. My Little Pony protocol.
It's a magical protocol with ponies.
I don't know.
MLPP:// Is it like, so can you like pop the camera up someplace and like fire it over the 802.11, like have it like take a picture and like tell it from your computer to take the picture?
I won't stop, you know, I won't derail the show to do it now, but I'll kind of fiddle with it as we're talking, see if I can find that. I know that they do have control applications for this, for some of their cameras. I don't know that this camera supports it. They do have something. When you go into Wi-Fi mode, it's got a listing of all of the different types of like Wi-Fi sub modes that it can go into. And I think there's PC mode, shoot and transfer, which is picture, and the internal card, it transfers it to the computer, or you can save it to the card and transfer it to the computer simultaneously. And then I forget. Oh, there's like transfer all pictures, transfer marketing. mark pictures. So as you're taking pictures, like you can mark them and say, yeah, I want to transfer this to my laptop. And then instead of like swapping the card out, if you don't have a reader, you can just, you know, pop the thing online, set up your ad hoc network, and just move all the pictures across. It's kind of convenient, but if you've got a reader, you know, it's faster to just take the card out, pop it to the reader, and then drag all the pictures. But it is.
Yeah, because the bandwidth for 802.11, whatever it is, if you're talking about like G, it's not as fast as the reader would be.
It does support G, but I imagine that the processor...
Unless you have like USB 1.
It's really not all that beefy. And when it's taking control of, you know, the Wi-Fi hardware and trying to read off the card and negotiating this protocol, it's got to take some type of performance hit. So hooking it up with a USB cable or putting it into your reader is probably faster. What I found out, actually, is I got a 2 gigabyte mini SD for Christmas also that I put into this thing. But when I put the 2 gigabyte card in my laptop, it doesn't work because my laptop's reader, for some reason, just doesn't understand 2 gigabyte cards or something. However, in my 6700, it works no problem. I put it in. It says, hey, it looks like you got a bunch of pictures on here. Would you like to check them out? Would you like to email them to your friends? It's crazy.
Yeah, that's the one thing I did not get for Christmas that I was actually kind of disappointed. I did not get a mini SD card.
You have the MDA.
I was looking
which
for
MDA
my phone, but some point in the future. The MDA, it's the HTC Wizard, which is the T-Mobile MDA, which is the I don't know what it's called internationally. But HTC makes it. So that's Wizard
right.
Is the not what it's called,
Wizard,
but
it's like
over here it's marketed as the MDA. Magician,
Apache,
I think.
Okay. And the difference is.
No. The 6700 is the Apache. Yeah, which I always found amusing because I always wanted to run like if I got a 6700, I wanted to run Apache on it. I think there's probably some. The PPC, the 6700 is also CDMA, and mine's GSM, and I think the processor's beefier on it, and I think it might have some more storage, and the hardware is slightly different. But, I mean, more or less all of the phones, they all have the more or less the same form factor. I mean, different buttons and such, but I don't know the next step up from mine, which is Hermes, that's what it's called, is the one that just got released by Singular. It's essentially it's my phone, except it has like a couple more buttons on it, and the processor speeds faster, and the keyboard layout is slightly different. But I mean, using it, it's like almost identical to my phone.
The this is not the
keyboard flips out
about?
The same way. All the storage slots are the right one.
Titan is the latest, greatest new one, and I think the only.
No, I don't know what the Titan is. I never heard that one.
Has either the 416 megahertz processor, 417 megahertz processor that mine has, and it has a 2 megapixel camera as opposed to 1.3. Oh man, are we getting onto the show topic already? Maybe we should save this.
I think we kind of both on there. So let's go. Maybe it is the Titan. Maybe that is the one I'm thinking of. I think it's slightly different because the Titan is has certain features that the one in Europe has certain features that the one in America doesn't have. Like for example, it has a built-in camera to make video phones calls, and Singular apparently doesn't want you to do that. But
I can't wait to check them out overseas. See how much better they are.
Yeah. All right. So actually, let's take a pause here and read the email and take a look, and we'll let everyone slobbering over for more with talking about smartphones and generally just a sort of a conversation between Not Theory and I. Our first email tonight is from Voltage X, and it's, hi, host and co-host. Any ideas for what 1-800-418-6264 is. Has to be one of the stranger numbers I called. Keep up the great work, Voltage X. And I got to say, this is the first time I actually got it. We got to have an email asking us to identify a number. And if people are listening to the stream, if this one streams, I guess that's kind of housekeeping. We haven't been streaming over the past weeks because of the server issues, and last week we had a twofer of 179 and 180 being released almost at the same time. So I'm going to edit this up, and we're going to try to put it on the stream this time. I'm not sure if the stream's working, but we'll find out tomorrow night because we're recording this on a Monday. But did you actually call this number? Oh, okay. Well, I everyone's probably calling it right now as they're listening. But I think the older generation, like the old farts like you and myself, will actually understand if we hear this number, because it says enter your message and then it beeps three times. And for those of you who don't know what that kind of stuff is, it's a beeper number. It's an 800 number that goes to someone's beeper. So you can essentially, if you want to talk to this person, just dial in your phone number and hit hang up, and you'll get a phone call relatively soon. Probably become some guy saying, who is this? Yeah.
What's a beeper? I've never heard of a beeper. Why don't they just use a cell phone?
Actually, my friend and I, we were trying to figure out when beepers will actually come back as a retro craze. Because he has a beeper for his work, because he goes into certain areas that he can't carry a cell phone in for certain security reasons. He works for the government. We'll just leave it at that. And he has his beeper, and like, for the longest time, when he says, well, here's my beeper number, and you can get to me if you need to contact me at work and I'm not at my desk. And, like, he told me and two friends, and we all basically just looked at each other saying, okay, well, how do you use a beeper? Because we forget. Like, we couldn't remember if it was, like, I actually remembered how to use it, but my friend just kept on calling the number and hanging up, thinking it was going to grab his caller ID, but it didn't.
Oh,
I was cool. I was smart. I knew how to punch in the digits after the thing's beeps and then hang up and wait for the phone call. I'm elite.
Actually, I got into a discussion with a younger guy a couple of months ago about beepers, and he was like, dude, I've never known anybody who had a beeper. Why would you have a beeper? Like, cell phones were super expensive back in the day. That's why. Not even the cool alphanumeric pagers. I'm talking, like, straight up just...
Yeah, like the 12-digit LCD display, which is like 8 segments. Or 7 segments or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
It is.
Yep. Kind of thing. That's what I was always
I remember when I first actually got, like, played with one, like my friend. I had a friend who was able to, let me borrow his for an hour or so to let me fiddle with it. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever because I could call a phone number and make it do something. I think it was like 12 at the time, so I was easily impressed.
Well, surprisingly, there still is a lot of pager traffic out there. Like, doctors have them, and like you said, your buddy at work has them and all that kind of stuff. If anybody's interested and you've got an old scanner lying around, you can build what's called an FSK decoder, a 2-level or a 4-level FSK decoder. It's a very simple schematic. You can hook it up to your scanner, and you can plug it into some, I think the software might be called WinFlex, because there's a couple of pager protocol standards. There's POCSAG, that's POCSAG, GOLAY, GOLAY, and Flex. And if you've got a 4-level FSK decoder, you can listen to all of them, and you can hook that up, and you will just have crazy time watching all these doctors' pages, like, patient, so-and-so has gone into labor, please come to the hospital, or, so-and-so just had a heart attack, all kinds of stuff like that you'll see. So if you got a couple of spare bucks for some parts and you're willing to do some soldering, look up FSK decoder, hook it up to your scanner, and screw around with it.
Well, if I have a scanner and I have, like, a line out, can I just little, like, put a plug that into my computer and have my computer do all the FSK decoding?
No, the problem with that is the audio out from it goes through a little bit of special processing. to make voice sound a little bit better, so it kind of mangles the signal that comes out. Like this, and it's very important, phase shift of different things. It's very important to be able to do the FSK decoding properly. On some scanners, supposedly it works because they have what's called a discriminator output as opposed to just a straight audio output. But if your scanner doesn't have that, you can wire up a discriminator output. You can just Google whatever your model scanner is, discriminator output, and there will be somebody who's got a page that describes how to do the mod. It's usually just one very simple, you know, solder a wire to this part and hook it up to your FSK decoder. Should be, I mean, even if you haven't soldered all that much before, if you're feeling a little adventurous and you're willing to void your warranty.
Well, I'd be willing to void my warranty, and I'd be willing to crack my scanner open. However, I wouldn't be willing to risk losing my scanner because that would make me sad.
Yeah. Well, there are also places that you can take your scanner and send it away. And
yeah, of course, that'd probably cost like an arm and a leg.
People are still in. You know, I don't think it's that expensive. And you know what? Honestly, if you have, like, some type of local ham radio group or something like that, if you bring your scanner there and you tell people, yeah, you know, I want to do some, you know, amateur radio work and I want to listen to these signals, they'll probably hook you up and say, oh, this is how you do it. Oh, let me show you how to do it. You know, all those old-timers will get excited.
Yeah, I want to own some pagers there, old dudes. Can you help me out?
Oh, you got to tell them that you want to listen to, like, I don't know, some type of RIDI or Bado or some other weird obscure protocol that's coming from China.
Dude, RIDI's elite.
RIDI is elite, I got to say.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Bado go on a complete tangent here since we're talking about ham radio buffs. Have you heard the news? Ham radio, if it has dropped the Morse code requirement for HF.
Oh, you know, I did hear that from someone. So what does that mean? That my old technician no code that then became like some kind of worthless.
Oh, yeah, your previously worthless for HF no code license now entitles you to HF privileges.
Now, does that mean I'm
you're a technician? You're not
general.
So technically, you know how tech. For those of you who don't remember, listen to our ham radio episode with myself and Not Theory. I don't know when it was, but just look at the archives. And no code techs now have the same privileges as what was then just a pure technician class. So we can now operate on HF. I don't think we can operate yet, but they've released the bureaucratic processes. They say, we're going to go drop this requirement, get ready for it. And then they say, like, 30 days later, okay, the requirement's dropped. You can do this now. And I don't know why they do that, but.
Yeah, see, when I did my license initially, there was novice, no code tech, tech plus, general, amateur, and extra. And then they dropped Tech Plus, and then made it, I thought, novice, technician, and then anybody who was Tech Plus became general.
No, I don't think that's how it happened.
Oh.
I think you're wrong. No, I think they dropped.
Could be wrong. It's been like, I don't know,
yeah.
Like 6 years.
I actually fell back into it about 6 months ago, and then all of a sudden the antenna got ripped off my car, so that kind of dropped that right in the tracks. But I think as it's I don't know. But if you get an amateur radio, it's cool. Just leave it at that. Listen to.
Oh, I want to hear this.
Oh, I was driving. Where was I driving? I was driving through the Walmart parking lot in Dartmouth, Massachusetts, and I was driving along and there was a low tree and I heard my antenna scrape across it and it just sounded funny and I just thought it just scraped across it. And then I look when I get home, I think it was like the next day, I come out to my car and the bag mounts there, but not the antenna. It got ripped out. Yeah, I was like, oh man. And actually, I think this was probably at least six, maybe even 9 months ago, and I haven't taken the mag mount off my car. It's just sitting there. It looks cool, whatever. I'll go break down a coat hanger, bend it out, make it to the proper wavelength, jam it in there, we'll be all set. Yeah, I'm insane. Yep. I'm Decoder Junior. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Shouts to Coder. We're not. I'm not even going to attempt to put myself up on that pedestal. So our next email is from Anonymous, and this is a long one, so I'm going to stumble through this one. I heard another listener bring up GUIDs again. I was the first guy to write in this using them in MySQL. GUIDs are called UUIDs in Unix environments. I probably should have mentioned that, or just asked about 16-byte integers to avoid confusion. As for the Windows registry, classes are represented by GUIDs, not necessarily programs. The purpose of GUIDs is to uniquely identify something with sufficient assurance that unintentional collisions will not occur, ever. Second Life likely chose GUIDs to identify objects because they can rest assured that they will never run out of them and very likely never generate the same one twice, assuming the rules are followed for generating them. In times long past, UUID/GUIDs were generated based in part on the MAC address of the computer and the date and time. People didn't trust computers to reliably create random data. As technology advanced, computers began to have multiple MAC addresses or share MAC addresses in clusters and were becoming capable of generating strong pseudo-random data to use in GUIDs. The current rules are to use pseudo-random number generators and generate GUIDs. UUIDs are certainly not new, and the general idea, whereas sequential primary keys must be generated or verified by a single central entity to avoid duplicates, UUIDs have sufficient entropy to be assumed unique regardless of regardless of where they were created, so long as they were created following the rules. Row IDs are sequential, correct? Also, from what I understand, if you throw enough money at MySQL, it can handle unimaginable amounts of use. And Second Life is liquid money. They virtually have no costs and are pure profit. At heart, a GUID/UUID is really only 16 unique bytes. In Windows, this is commonly expressed by an opening brace, curly brace that is, 8-4-4-4-12 hexadecimal characters, closing brace. Storing hexadecimal characters as a plain ASCII in a char 60, I don't know how you pronounce that, char or car, I always had a problem with that. Char 30, Car, okay.
I think it's car.
So I was right. Car 36 column is sloppy at best. Car 36 sounds like hyphens and braces are being stored in the column as characters. That's like storing date times by converting them to a string and saving them to a column. It's just not efficient, especially not for a primary key. It is good database practice to keep primary keys as concise as possible. If a GUID is 128 bits or 16 bytes and a byte is the same thing as a char, then it should be accurately represented in a char 16 field. It's not good practice to use a char as a primary key, so I didn't want to do that. If my memory serves me right, MySQL also pitched a fit when I tried to. Even without assigning a primary key to a column, it merely displaying it in the terminal would squirrel up the terminal, because it would literally be trying to print control characters, and that made DB maintenance a pain in the butt. The project I was working on was eventually canceled, but had it continued, I would have used an 8-byte integer column in lieu of a car route. It's a shame that to use MySQL, I'd have to sacrifice half the entropy of the primary keys, though. What do other people do when they use unique identifiers that can be generated disparately or merge into a central MySQL table? This cannot be a new problem. By the way, it just occurred to me that in the near future, we're going to have a new name to call these GUIDs or UUIDs. IP addresses, IPv6 addresses, are in fact 16 bytes long. Whew, boy. Yeah, I know. Seriously, people are writing, like, epic letters. I mean, I'm not to discourage them, but, man, I'm just not good at reading this stuff. And I got to say, that's the most complete definition of GUID/UUIDs I have ever heard. Whew. He really should attach, like, a KRAD handle to the letter so you can give it to, like, proper attribution and stuff. Yeah. So you're the database genius. You know how to store a GUID into a, I can even say Postgres table.
Sure. You make a byte column and you put an index on it.
Oh, see, just use Postgres.
Yeah, you know, Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Postgres doesn't have this type of limitation that he's talking about, where it kind of gets upset when you use a char16 as a primary key. But you know, I could be wrong. I'm pretty sure that Postgres does have some type of row ID mechanism that can be used, so that if you have multiple machines, it sounds like he was talking about what do people do when they need unique identifiers that can be generated disparately and merged through a central MySQL table. I think what a lot of places do is they take unique, like each database server has a unique machine ID that has its own row IDs, and when you take those two numbers and put them together, then you have a unique ID no matter what. Even if the row IDs overlap, you still have that machine ID to make it unique. So I work on a database application for a retail application, and that's what they did. They had machine ID, row ID, and there was never a collision because all the machine IDs were unique because they were negotiated when the machines were configured. So it was very simple and a lot easier than generating GUIDs because, you know, if your index or something like that only indexes the first couple of characters of it, you don't have to worry about collisions in the index and all kinds of other fancy nonsense. They just used two integer columns, made a composite key, and that was it. Never worried.
Boy, leave it to knot theory to solve the problem in like 5 minutes. Not even that.
Well, it was the last job I had. That was what they did. It's definitely not the cleanest solution. I mean, it would be nice if you could just depend on these keys to be generated and never collide, but these guys didn't have faith in that, and they were dealing with a lot of money, so they said, let's make sure that they...
Well, doesn't SHA-1 have no collisions found in it yet?
No, I thought SHA-1 did. I thought the only safe ones were 256, 384, and 5.
Oh, okay.
Well,
perhaps I'm just not caught up with that kind of stuff. There we go. Just have a 256 byte key for each row column. For the primary key for each row.
Yeah. That's space efficient. Yeah. Just for shits and giggles, SHA-1 broken.
Oh boy, I'm way behind those.
No big deal. It's not really like it's that important. Everybody's using 512. They're cool anyway.
I still use MD5 because MD5 is elite.
Yeah,
I'm old school.
Dude, I use ROC 13 and everything. I don't care. Nobody figures
it
out.
Yeah, but it's a hell. You gotta like for like not theories like you know Uber Elite CD collection. You gotta download the CD, and then you have to download the ROT 13 of the CD for like you know 650 megabytes each, and then you gotta run and compare against them just to make sure it's okay. It works though. It works. I mean, I'm not gonna knock it.
That's what I'm saying. I don't have to worry about people breaking it.
Yeah, that's what I'm gonna create. I'm gonna create a ROT 13 Project Bovine. I'm going to get like 50 million computers and use like, you know, a nanosecond each. And we're like, yeah, it's broken. All right.
We broke all the rods. All multiples of 13.
Yeah.
No problem.
All right, so let's like we've technically already covered personal hacking stories, and I guess we kind of already made headway into the specific show topics. So we're talking about smartphones. Originally, this episode was going to be sort of this is one I've always kind of planned out and tried to get it to go this week, but it didn't work out. It was going to be a you know cell phone grudge match of why my cell phone kicks your cell phone's ass, and we're going to have Natus on here talking about lead about his BlackBerry, and Savant was going to be on here talking about his Razer and his SDA, because he doesn't really like his SDA. But, of course, I think his SDA is kind of broken, so perhaps that's why he doesn't like it. But it's good stuff, but right now it's just me and not theory. We're going to talk about smartphones. Word to your mother.
Word. So, I don't know. For me, when it comes to smartphones, I guess that there's three platforms maybe that are relevant, maybe four. There's like the standard Java platform that just runs Java apps. There's the Windows Mobile platform, and there's Symbian. I can't really think of anything else that jumps to mind. Maybe Linux, if people are considering Linux phones now. But
well, what does the BlackBerry run? Because I was actually curious about this, and I really couldn't find much. Is that just a Java-based?
Well, Yeah, it's got its own proprietary operating system, embedded operating system.
Okay.
It does run Java applications. I don't know which standard. That's my problem with Java, is that there's so many standards. There's J2 SE, J2 EE, J2 ME, J2 ME, Midlet Profile 1, Midlet Profile 2, CLDC 1, CLDC 2. Like, guys, it's fucking Java. I thought it was supposed to be standard so I can use it anywhere. Well,
I can't use Java apps on my MDA. I can't use, Google Maps for my phone. There's a way, if you go to, the forums, you have to download this runtime environment from IBM because it runs on Windows Mobile, and then you do that, and then you grab Windows Mobile, and then you run three times in a counterclockwise pattern, and got to do it while the moon's full. It was complicated enough that I looked at it and said, oh, screw this, I'll just deal with it.
Do you have to use Windows Genuine Mobile Advantage or something crazy too?
We want to make sure your Windows update is correct or something. I was in my car.
You want to make sure that Iris Windows.
I was in my car the other day, and I heard on the radio an ad for Google Maps. It was kind of creepy. I was like, whoa. And they were advertising it for it was Google Maps Mobile, and they were talking about this ditzy girl, and she was like, yeah, Google Maps folds up the map to make them really small so they fits up in your phone. I'm like, oh my god, I can't keep my car on the road. It's so bad. It burns.
Oh, it burns. It's a deep
bleeding out of my ears. Damn you, Eric Schmidt. Damn you.
Oh, man. That's crazy. I have not heard any...
Perhaps Boston's just leading the way. Yay for me.
Well, I have actually... I haven't really been listening to regular radio. I've been listening to XM a whole lot. And I got to say, I feel like, unless it's on the BBC News, that I completely don't know about it at all. And I don't think the BBC is going to...
Hey, you never know. Well, there's Google Maps in... They have it for London, so you never know.
Oh, they do. I don't think that the BBC would have somebody like that advertise. I don't know that they really have anybody advertise on BBC at all, except their own shows. That's really...
Yeah, they're all government supported over there. That's socialism and all that stuff.
Hey, the fucking BBC is awesome. I don't care what anybody says. BBC is like the coolest station ever. I listen to it pretty much all day. All
right. So there's well, I guess you could say three or four operating systems. I don't know. I don't think you're the person I should be asking this, but do you count the hip top as a smartphone? Okay.
Actually, yeah, I would. It's like weird proprietary nonsense. You can't download regular.
No, you can't. No, unless they change it with the Sidekick 3, which I would not really bet that they would.
Yeah, I would definitely consider it a, smartphone platform. I don't know how many. I mean, the last time you had your Sidekick, how many applications
probably about,
did they have released?
Applications or games, or both.
No,
applications
games.
Probably under 10.
Yeah, they had Calorie Cruncher and fucking Wallet something or other.
Hey, it had SSH, so I was a happy duck.
See, that's true. You know what? And I got to admit, the SSH client on the Sidekick was...
Originally it was called, I think it was called Monkey Terminal. And then they decided, oh, wait, we shouldn't call it that. We should call it Terminal Client.
Okay, well... It was pretty good. The only thing that I didn't like about it that they didn't really have any answer for me for, I had to figure out by myself, was that when you connect to a server, you have to have some SSH option enabled. It's allow passwords to be tunneled in clear text or something like that. Some option I had to set on my SSH server before it would accept a connection. Otherwise, it would just silently fail. And I told them about it, and they said, oh, thanks for the bug report. That's great. We'll be sure to update the document. Check back, and he never did it. So.
Yes, and this was part of the reason why Knot Theory's Hip Top was in like three or four pieces by the then time he was done with it.
Listen, if your users report a genuine issue that affects them and you say, oh, we're going to put it in documentation, you never do, you're an asshole because they're doing your QA and all that other shit for you,
mm-hmm.
and you're just throwing it away. You're just frustrating more of your users. I've dealt a lot in the past year with QA and documentation and all kinds of stuff at this, you know, fairly large company I was working for. And when users reported an issue to me and told me it was a big deal, we documented that shit right away. But nobody else seems to do it. So, screw them. Bad company. Naughty company. I slap your wrist.
That's not the only thing he slaps. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Forehead.
Yeah, hip. I gotta say, I enjoyed the hip top. It was nice, but the problem is there was just you were locked into it. There was no expandability, like those six apps that we were talking about. Those were the six apps you could download, and I'm not sure if they've improved it with further versions, but I think they're all connected to the same one. So it was
yeah.
it's definitely it's,
I was just saying my real big issue with them. Was how closed the platform was, and even if you wanted to be a developer, apparently with the original Sidekick, it was a lot easier to get developer access. But then they started seeing that everybody who wanted free ringtones and stuff was signing up as a developer, so they just locked it down, and they said, nope, you got to go through this approval process, and if you ever want to release an application, you can only release to other developers unless you go through us, and you're screwed. And then for me, it's no motivation to work on an application, because what if I found something that was, you know, a viable application, and then they said, no, we're not going to support it because there's not enough people to use it. So I was like, you know what? Fuck you. My Sidekick's getting
right before the trio. No. Yeah, that was the major issue. I mean, I got into the developer program, I think. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly where it goes. But if you got into the developer program, you had to void your warranty with T-Mobile, and I was like, no, I don't want to do that. I spent a lot of money on this phone. Sorry. And, I actually played around with the emulator and, like, looked at their developer forums, and there was basically, like, you know, tons of software you could download because you were a developer. And some of them was pretty interesting. I will say, like, there was, like, a peer-to-peer messaging client, and I actually think someone wrote a peer-to-peer file trading app. You just couldn't actually put files on it. And there was some really cool stuff out there, and just none of the stuff got published. So that was really frustrating. And when I looked at it, I had the choice to go when I upgraded to a Sidekick 2 because there was really nothing else out there at that time in the market. So I went up to a Sidekick 2, and I eventually lost my Sidekick 2 like 3 months after I got it, and that was very sad. And so I went back to Sidekick 1, and my contract was up, and I said, okay, I can either get the MDA, which runs Windows Mobile, or the Sidekick 3. And I looked at it and I said, you know, I really want to go with Windows Mobile because the Sidekick was really starting to get frustrating on me. So here I am today. And I'm...
There you are. It's really sad when Windows...
Yeah, that's actually kind of weird, isn't it? Hey, I got to say, Windows Mobile 5 isn't half bad. I mean, there's some odd quirks about it, but there was some odd quirks about the Sidekick too. And... You just learn to work yourself around them. Have you actually ever used?
Yeah, I got it.
Have you ever used a HipTop? Not a HipTop, a BlackBerry.
You know, I played around with Natus's a little bit, and it was underwhelming. It seemed like it's a phone, and it can run Java applications, but other than that, it was. I mean, that's all it did. And for some people, that's great because it's simple and it's. You know, serves its purpose and it doesn't crash like my Windows phone does. I will admit wholeheartedly that my Windows phone crashes, even my new one. But you know what? I need something that I can get in and screw around with. So,
I can't say I've ever actually had my phone crash. I've just had applications that lock up on my phone. Like I have this little, I have a T-Mobile MDA, and I have like on my Today screen, like it grabs the weather for me for like the next 4 or 5 days. And I told it to update it once, and I lost my connection, and the program locked up. And it was just like, you know, constantly in Windows Mobile 5, you don't have an hourglass. You have this little round thing that, like, changes color. And it was just sitting there. And actually, I let it sit there for a while, and then I got a phone call, and none of my buttons work. I couldn't answer the phone. And I was like, oh, okay. I think I'm going to have to reboot now.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. But, you know, again, for me, it's worth it because I can get in there and write applications for it, and it's just stupid.
Oh, it's amazingly easy. And you don't have to void your warranty. But,
yeah, exactly. And the emulators are
amazing. Amazing.
You can write applications.
I mean, you get a copy. I mean, you have to buy, unless you have like connections someplace, like Not Theory and I do. Yeah. Or you go to a release event and they give you a free copy of Visual Studio 2005. You're like, thank you. you have to pay a good chunk of change for it. I think I don't even want to know how expensive it is, but you have all like the mobile emulators there, and you can grab them, install them, and you essentially have this like smartphone up on your screen that emulates everything that it would on an actual phone. It's uncanny, but it's easy to develop for, and you can develop stuff for like Blackberries. But I'm basically the support person for my supervisor and her Blackberry, because she doesn't understand really how to use it. Actually, I won't say that. She's improved greatly over the past couple of months. I've actually become quite impressed. But, like, I played with her BlackBerry, and I was very underwhelmed compared to, like, my Windows mobile phone. I mean, I wholeheartedly agree with Not Theory. It's simple, it works, but I just was like, oh, this sucks. I really didn't like the interface either.
Yeah, it seemed kind of clunky using the thumb wheel to get around. I didn't really like it. I'd like to be able to like touch the screen and do things. I don't think any black.
No, I don't think so.
Screen, yeah. Yeah, for me that's a problem. I like the touch screen. I like to be able to click around on my applications, click around the web browser, you know, draw shit on the screen.
Boobies.
I like to do all that kind of stuff. And don't have it strike again.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same way, but. Like I see people with like Blackberries, like for like the first generation models almost, like the like black and white screens, and they're still clucking away on them. So I will give RIM like lots of props for making a hell of a reliable system that seemed to work for years on end. So you really don't see that much with Windows Mobile Phone. I mean, how many people do you know that are actually running Pocket PC 2003 on their phone?
Yeah, not too many. I have one phone that I plan on using for a little bit that's got Windows Mobile 2003, but honestly, I've gotten so used to Windows Mobile 5, I'm just not excited about going back to it. So, and who knows, I'm sure they'll come out with another version soon that'll make me decide.
Yeah,
version.
Apparently it's already out there. They're calling it's codenamed Crossbow. Yeah.
Ooh.
I've never used Symbian, has you? Have you?
Actually, I have a. Sorry, I don't know. I just got bad reception. I have a Sony Ericsson P910, and I have a Nokia. I think it's a 3650. They both run Symbian. Symbian by far lets you do way cooler stuff than Windows Mobile.
Blasphemy!
But when I went to get into the whole, no, I'm serious. You can access anything on the phone. That's why there's so many viruses and all kinds of worms and crap like that for Symbian phones. Because anything you want to do with the phone, you want to turn the phone on silently and call a number and hide it from the user, yeah, you can do that, no problem. You know, you want to turn on the microphone and record something and then, you know, send MP3 files or whatever, you know, encode them into MP3 and then send them off to some website and just spy on people, yeah, you can write an application to do that, all silently without the user having any clue what's going on. Windows Mobile, you really can't do that. Like, you make a call, and it shows up on the screen, and there's just no way to hide it. But Symbian, you can get right down into the guts of it, and you can say, I want to do this, this, and this. You know, I want to turn on the camera. I want to illicitly send pictures to Russia. You know, whatever you want to do, you can do it. But the development is a lot more complicated than Windows Mobile. You got a program, I think you program.
I think so, yes.
Plus, or C. I don't know that there's anything any easier than that. It's not really a big deal. It's not like it's hard to program in C++. It just, you know, you got to be a little more careful about it. But I just remember getting the development environment was just really annoying. It reminded me a lot of Palm development. I don't know if you've done any of that, but Palm development is a nightmare. I guess that's another platform we could say for smartphones. The Palm, like Trio 600, Trio 650, 700.
That's something I didn't think of.
Yeah, I didn't think of it now, honestly, because I've had such bad experiences with Palm. I know people that have old Trios, and they're like, oh, it's so easy to use, it's so great. You know, I love feature X, Y, and Z about it. And I looked at my 700, my 700W that I had from Verizon, and it had all these features, but only because, as I find out now, going to the 6700, that Palm had gone in and made those modifications to Windows. Like, Windows by default is definitely not as user friendly on the today screen as the Palm.
That's interesting.
It's easier to search around contacts and stuff. Yeah, like if you want to search for a contact, you just start typing it on the main screen. I'm pretty sure on my phone, if I try to do that now, it'll just stare and do nothing.
Hold on. I think I have my phone right here, so let's go try that on mine. But yeah, I used a Palm Trio, and it was nice, but I just, I don't know. Palm seems to have lost the usability war, or at least the mindshare war, and it just doesn't really seem to be going here. Actually, I really need to reboot my Windows mobile phone because it just woke up. Yep, it's just staring at me as I type away here. Theory sucks.
Well, the Palm-based phones, they're nice from a usability standpoint, but again, from a developer standpoint, just like Symbian, it's too much. If I want to make a simple application that does something, you know, like connects to a website or, you know, draws something on the screen, I should be able to do it in 10 minutes. It should be stupidly simple. If I want to get in and do crazy stuff, yeah, it's going to take longer. But it seems like Palm and Symbian err on the side of letting you do nearly anything you want to do at the expense of making everything really hard to do. Whereas Windows Mobile lets you do some things, but not really everything, but almost everything you do is really, really simple. You can get into native code, which is C++, you know, embedded Visual C++ code, and do complicated things. But for the most part, you can stay in C# or Visual Basic and you can just churn out apps.
You can even stay in C# and import native code into it. Like, for example, if I wrote an application for Pocket PC called MFR Cubed, and it was a blue box, red box, and 16 touch tone. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I gotta say, I was kind of impressed by it, and I think I wrote it in like quite literally an afternoon. And I think most of that time was actually sat down trying to figure out how to get it to play sounds, because that's kind of important when you're making a blue box.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to ask you about that. I remember you had mentioned you wrote something like this a while back, and I haven't really played around with sound yet, so I'm gonna have to find out where you found all your cool sound info. I know I found it back in the day, but I don't know where any of
it was. It's all MSDN, and it's actually, you kind of import this unsafe library and do some like slight technical tickly-pokery and get it working. But after that, it works fine. It's simple. And I mean, the one plus about Windows Mobile is that when you're developing stuff, the documentation is incredibly impressive. With the one thing Microsoft does right is their MSDN. They document everything for you. I mean, going into I was having this conversation today with Blunderbuss and IRC about how we were comparing the PHP documentation website to the MSDN, and MSDN just blows it out of the water. And PHP is pretty good for documentation, but it just pales in comparison to MSDN.
I really wasn't all that impressed with MSDN. I guess the things I was looking for just weren't really documented all that well. Or maybe I don't know where to look for the stuff I'm trying.
Well, Not Theory was sitting there on MSDN going,
eventually,
typing in search for mobile phone virus creation. Damn it.
Mobile
phone rootkit. Damn.
I hold the mouse up to my mouth and say, computer, transparent aluminium. And nothing. MSDN didn't do a damn thing.
Well, that's because you were on a Mac.
Very. Oh, that's right. I didn't have the button to click. Damn it. I needed to right-click for that command.
Wasn't Scotty on a Mac for that, I think?
I think he was. I think back then those were the only computers that had mice.
It was like 1984. It was good stuff.
Nice.
A keyboard. How quaint. Best line ever.
Yeah, and then, you know what? That's ridiculous, okay? Somebody who types on a keyboard their whole life. They can't type as fast as a guy who never had to use a keyboard before because everything was voice command. And now all of a sudden he's like one with the computer. Like
he's Scotty. He can do that kind of stuff.
Oh, what an asshat. I don't like
that. Dude, if Spock's walking over there, he just has to put his hand up to the monitor and, like, you know, controls everything. He becomes one with the interweb.
He's got, like, some kind of crazy Jedi mind trick.
Spock, he can mind meld. Good stuff.
There you go. Anyway.
All right, so another thing with smartphones is the whole... Everyone's talking about, you know, new stuff. I mean, we're putting out acronyms, GPRS, EDGE, CDMA, UMTS. Did we talk about HSPDA? I don't think we did. HSDPA. I kind of completely bumbled over that. When you're talking about a smartphone, I mean, a smartphone is a phone basically with, you know, all the interweb stuff included in it, like email and, you know, internet connection, web surfing. Mine has an SSH client on there, and there's all kinds of, like, you basically have a network connection on the phone. And depending on what kind of smartphone you're going to get various, you know, speeds depending on what protocols it uses. And GPRS is 2G, right, isn't it? Or is that 2.5? I always get confused on the whole 0.5 thing.
No, I don't really know. Yeah, I don't really know what they consider 2.5 or 2 or whatever, but it's definitely not 3G.
No, it's not.
But I want to say this, too. GPRS has been around for a long time.
Yes, it has, actually. GPRS is pretty good. GPRS averages about 60 kilobits a second, so you're basically going to get the maximum throughput because, you know, when you're talking about wireless connections and cell phones, we're going to talk about, like, some crazy numbers here, but the lag is noticeable. Like, there's a definite lag to it. I don't really know how to compare it, but, like, you know, when I'm talking, my hip top was GPRS, and, like, I would come back, I would, like, tell it to load up a web page, and it would take about anywhere between 30 seconds to a minute for it to haul down, which, I mean, it's good in a pinch, but it was slow. And even with my MDA, I mean, it's much better. I think it's much zippier, but, the lag's still there, and, I mean, it's not going to be replacing my broadband connection anytime soon.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, well, since we're talking about MDAs, MDAs and... No, you're just CDMA. Why am I thinking that? MDAs and a lot of other GSM phones now in the United States are actually using EDGE, which I did not write down the acronym, and I'm a moron. EDGE is like something like extended data for GPRS something, I don't know. It's basically GPRS with a speed boost on it, and that can go up to all the way up to 236.8 kilobits a second, theoretically. I did some speed tests with my Edge connection, and I think I averaged on a download about 20 kilobytes a second. So, I don't know, what does that average out to, about 160 kilobits?
Something like that. Yeah.
And that was in the middle of downtown Boston, so that's probably as good as it's going to get for you. EVDO, which is not GSM, but GPRS and EDGE are all GSM-based. EVDO, which is currently in use in the United States, and I think that's about it, right?
I thought that Japan used it. I don't know why I think that, but... I don't know.
I think WCDMA is something completely different. Who knows?
I don't know. I just Googled Japan and EVDO, and it's just something about Japan rolls out new EVDO phones.
Oh, perhaps I'm wrong. Anyway, EVDO is a CDMA base, which is a code division multiple access. That's just a meaningless real acronym unless you're really getting into cell phone networks. EVDO goes up to about 2.5 megabits a second download and 154 kilobits a second upload. EDGE, on the other hand, has 20 kilobits both ways or so. 20 kilobytes both ways. My elite speed tests. I think when I uploaded BinRev 178, I uploaded it via my Edge headset, my Edge headset, and I was trying it again. My Edge handset. Whew, boy, I guess I'm getting tired. Yeah, and I think upload speeds were slightly slower, but I think it was actually the ironic part is it's faster than my DSL connection on the upload side for throughput, because my upload on my DSL at home is only 128 kilobits. So my edge I can upload an episode faster over my cell phone than my DSL connection, which I found kind of sad.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Another standard out there is UMTS, which is not deployed in the United States yet, but Singular is touting that as their new protocol, and they said they're going to come out with stuff in 2007. They're already selling handsets for it. They're we were talking about the HTC Titan, and that's their, what do they call it, 8525, I think that's their model. And that's a new thing, and that has UMTS support.
I said no. That sounds. I think that sounds right. 8525.
Yeah, I think the old one was the 8125. UMTS supports up to 11 megabits a second down, and up to 384 kilobits a second up. So, I gotta say that's pretty impressive. And eventually, it might go up to 3.6 megabits a second up. So, hey, I beat the hell out of my edge connection. What can I say? Also, there's HSDPA, which I don't think is in the United States. I haven't heard of it. I heard Moo talking about it on IRC a lot over in Britain, and I don't think it's even released over there yet. It's coming, though, so who knows. The current HSPDA deployments support 1.8 megabits or 3.6 megabits down. And actually, further steps are going to come out soon to do 14.4 megabits both ways, which is just crazy. I remember when I thought I was hot shit when I had a 10 megabit Ethernet connection.
Yeah, not anymore, man. It's no big deal.
Yeah. Now you look at 10 megabit cards and go, crap, I can't sell this anywhere.
Yeah, I'm looking at HSDPA on Wikipedia, and they show the Category 10, the fastest, is max data speed, 14.4 megabits per second.
Do you imagine all the porn you can possibly download with that?
Oh, yeah. You could have, like, four windows of porn open easily.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure more than a few people are actually saying, well, what good is doing this do on my phone? But, you know, you do surf the web on your phone, and, I mean, pulling down email, you can pull down, like, if you watch TV, you see those stupid little Sprint ads when they're comparing themselves to Singular going, look, Sprint is so much faster. Never mind, we don't have coverage anywhere. But what really pisses me off about Sprint, have you seen these commercials, is you're using the guy from Office Space now. I'm like, I've lost all respect for you.
Oh, really? I haven't seen that.
Yeah, well, the
I don't actually have TV, so I can't.
Oh, you're lame. See, I have everything TiVo'd, so it's sort of like I don't watch commercials, but I slowed it down when I saw the close-up. Oh, cool. I wonder what the hell he's in. Oh, he's working for Sprint? Oh, fuck him.
Now,
so that made me sad. The main character, I'm drawing a blank on his name. I can't even remember it.
In the movie, Peter Gibbons?
Peter, yes, that's it. See, if they had, like, Lumberg on their advertising Sprint, I'd be like, yeah, go do it.
Yeah,
but whatever.
I'm looking at some Sprint commercials on YouTube, but I don't see that guy on it.
I don't know. He's talking about this is the other thing that gets me. They're talking about how they moved their free nights and weekends to 7 p.m. for us. And that just really, that totally reeks of 1984. Because I remember when, like, my parents got their first cell phone, they had the free nights and weekends on it. They started at 7 p.m. And then they creeped it up to 8. And then they creeped it up to 9. Now they're moving us back to 7 and thinking they're doing us a favor. I mean, seriously, I expect to get a little memo in the mail saying my chocolate ration has gone up to 3 grams or something.
Nice.
But, there's my tirade against Sprint here. But, these fast speeds are like, oh, no, it's just to my cell phone. One of the cool things about, like, I know that my hip top didn't do it, and this was one of the things that I constantly waited for when I was sitting on my train diddling with my hip top. and that just sounded really bad, but we won't get into that.
Diddle yourself on the screen, that's cool.
Yeah. I bet you could do it. Actually, one of the first things I did when I get with a hip top was, dude, I can surf porn anywhere. And I like loaded up like this little cheesy porn site, and I showed it to all my roommates, and they were like, that you can get porn anywhere. college.
Very nice.
But like the newer phones out there, you can actually plug them into your computer and use them as a modem. So like, for example, like when I take the commuter rail back and forth from work, so on the train in the morning, on the train in the afternoon, you'll see me at one of the desks with my phone hooked up to my laptop and chugging away there, and it's amazing. It's just the fact that I can surf on the train, do anywhere, catch up on my email, you know, work, or upload a BinRev episode or check the BinRev email or check my own email and surf the web or, just, I mean, do whatever you want because it's a full-fledged internet connection. It's kind of slow, I will admit. It's not pulling down uber-fast internet, but it works. And I think mine supports natively, but you just have to break Verizon's rules to get yours.
What do you mean exactly?
Well, you're tethering or what? Using your phone as a modem. Verizon says no.
Right. Yeah, they don't allow it. But there's a program called, I think it's called PDANet, and you can download that. I think they want like $25 for it, and it re-enables everything for you, so you can use it. You're not supposed to, but honestly, you know what? You want to charge me $45 a month for unlimited data? You know, you got to expect people are going to use that. And from what I've heard, the way that they detect to see who's using this is they just give you this artificial cap of how much data you can use per month. And it's built
2 gigabytes.
What's that?
2 gigabytes, I think it was.
I thought it was 5 gigs, or five
perhaps
gigs.
I'm wrong.
3 months in a row, and then 10 gigs 1 month or something like that. I don't know. In any case, it's really not that much data when you think about it for a whole month. But then again, you know what? I use I actually do have a PC card from Verizon, and they have the same limitations on that, and I don't even come close any month to going over because I'm just using it for SSH and, you know, some other kind of database work and things like that, stuff that's really not bandwidth intensive. So I never come close, so it works pretty well for me.
I think Robert X. Cringely decided to put a test because he has a PC card, and he found this program that, you know, meters your internet access and keeps track of it, and he just set it up over 1 month just to grab his email, and he went over the limit, whatever the limit was. I'm not sure if it was 5 or 2. And he got and he just said, I just use this for my email. And yes, I get a lot of email.
Yeah, well, you gotta.
I also think the.
I was gonna say, if you're working for a big company and the company is like, you know, footing the bill for you, in order to not lose that company's contract, a lot of time they'll make deals. Usually, if you're a regular person, from the stories that I've heard, Verizon would be like, no, it's impossible. They send you a form letter that says the only way you could use more than 256 megabytes in 1 month is to, because they say that you've used, you know, 40 or 80 or 160 times the amount that a normal user would use. And they say the only way that you could possibly do that is by streaming video and audio and shit. So.
Yeah, like Verizon's terms of services are like draconian. You can't use like streaming video, can't use VoIP, can't use streaming audio. Like, for example, can't stream your MP3s from your home server because that's a no-no. It's crazy. Like,
yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's stupid. It's stupid. Verizon's a poopy head. All right. Well, I think we didn't really cover most of the topics we actually wanted to cover, but hey, you know, it was a fun show. But I think we're going to have to wrap it up right now.
Really? Already, huh?
Yeah, I think we're actually kind of running out of time. If not, you know, we'll try to get it short this week. We'll make up for all those two-hour epic episodes we've had over the past couple of weeks. All right. No announcements. Actually, the announcements we do have, we announced that Booter was still looking for people for his Jenny scan. Booter's Jenny scan is done. I think I talked to Stankdog. Stankdog made that announcement. So it's on docdroppers.org if you want to check it out and call up some Jennies. Do you have any shouts?
I'm going to shout out Stank Diggy.
Aw, that's so nice.
That's love right there.
That is total love. I'll send a shout out to you. Thank you for coming on. I mean, I haven't talked to you in forever. Shouts out to the guy who's talking way too much about GUIDs, and shouts out to people who still use pagers, because people who still use pagers are cool. Closing, do we have a site? Oh, I don't have a site of the week this week. Site of the week is ocremix.org, where we get all of our closing music. And we are closing music tonight is the Hyrule Party Mix by Nops from Zelda 64 Ocarina of Time. I probably mispronounced that. Email, radio@binrev.com. And I guess we'll see you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.